Come on.
Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, a strong and powerful Tyrone Ross Jr. Tyrone, are you ready to do this?
I am ready. Let's go.
Excellent. Let's do this. Tyrone is the managing partner at Noble Bridge Wealth and Asset Management Services, as well as an early stage startup and crypto asset advisor. I'm excited to have you on. Tyrone, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, I am born and raised in Central New Jersey, where I went to high school in Metuchen, New Jersey, and went on to get a full scholarship to run track at Georgia Tech.
Nice.
It was nice. until the next part of the story. I ended up getting kicked out of Georgia Tech twice, lost my scholarship. Was blessed enough to get another scholarship to finish up at Seton Hall, where I also went to graduate school. And that is where a professor suggested that I work on Wall Street. And he helped me walk onto Wall Street at 26 years old, never taking a business class, never taking an economics class, a finance class, or knowing anything about Wall Street. And 13 years later, here I am as a partner at a registered investment advisor. After various stints at Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and an investor relations firm that was called Financial Dynamics, which is where the first place where I actually, you know, got introduced to Wall Street. So it's been quite the circuitous route. But here now, and I left Merrill roughly 16 months ago, wanted to put my stake in the ground now as a crypto assets and early stage startup advisor at the behest of Howard Lindzen, who is a very successful investor who I followed on Twitter, took his advice. And here I am. The last 16 months have just been a complete blessing. And I'm able to work with clients that want to work with me. I get to choose a little bit. They're very much into a tech-driven relationship, an advice-driven relationship, and they're embracing what I believe is the next stage of financial services in the world, which is digital assets.
Awesome. Well, there's a lot of good stuff there for us to talk about, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what it was that happened. You got kicked out of school.
So I was the first one in my family to finish high school. So college was kind of like a dream. I always joke with people, if you came to my high school graduation, you would have thought I got my PhD. It was a really big deal. So I was 17 years old. I'd never been away from home. I didn't know anything. So I just didn't go to class. This is the best way to put it.
That's a good way to get kicked out.
Yeah, it's a very good way to get kicked out. So and because Georgia Tech is very hard to get into, but it's even harder to get out of. And the classes were just crazy. And I'm like, well, instead of just sitting here struggling with organic chemistry, I won't go. So I finished my first year with like a 1.7 or something like that. I don't know. And then I had to reapply and got back in and just couldn't catch it. And, you know, I believe when I left there that my GPA was right somewhere around a 1.0 or something like that. So it was bad. I just didn't go to class. And I was in Atlanta. I'd never been away from home, and it was parties every weekend or whatever. So I just found that more appealing than doing what I was paid to go down there to do. So, yeah.
Well, I think that we all can empathize as all having been young people at one point in time. So
yeah.
Right on. But you found your way to Seton Hall and had a successful track career. And then somebody saw it in you. That's what the next thing I was curious about. What do you think that it was that this person saw in you that said, you know what, Wall Street's a good fit for you?
You know what? I've been asked that. And all that I remember, him say it was two things, and one that I'm still trying to find out if it's true or not. And the other is I've been able to make a way for myself. The other was I was really great at presenting information. So there was a lot of projects and stuff, and all the really smart people would do all of the deep analytical work, and they would have me present it. And we would always do very well on our projects. And the other thing he said was, he's like, you seem to have a very analytical brain in terms of getting data and finding the data points that match. Like, I'm not necessarily the person that can go and grab data and all of that, but I can pull the right pieces from it and get it to relate to people and have some great narrative and talking points around it. And he was like, I think that's going to translate well in, you know, on Wall Street. But he originally said, you know, it's somewhere maybe like a hedge fund or something like that. So he was like, well, so you could actually have really smart people pull the data and you could communicate it to investors or whatever. So that was his initial thing. And that's exactly where I ended up, like in an investor relations firm, just which is PR with numbers, but just being able to write press releases and things like that. So I had no idea what he was talking about.
Right.
But you know, here we are. You know, 13 years later, it's been nothing but a blessing.
Life's a funny thing, right? So, and obviously, whenever somebody gets to a stage like a Division I athlete, and I think that you even took it a little bit further with track and field, you were highly successful. I think that those skills probably apply in other areas of life as well. So, excellent.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yep.
So. What is it about the early stage startups and the crypto assets that is such of such great interest to you?
Great question. So I think as a traditional financial advisor, I just find traditional assets boring. I just think stocks and bonds and it was just very boring. But more importantly, I think what I found fascinating was my clients were younger and this is where they were. And if I was going to grow with them, if I was going to service them, if I was going to, you know, execute my fiduciary duty to the fullest, I had to embrace that. So being at a financial legacy institution like Merrill Lynch, they're used to working with older folks who are rich and then saying, don't lose me money. It's a whole different scenario of when you're working with those that are young, that are entrepreneurial, that are in the accumulation phase of their lives, especially talking about early stage startups and early stage companies where they are brilliant. They have a great idea, but they don't know anything about business. So to help them understand how to grow a business, to understand the nuances of how to raise capital, of how to sell correctly, how to manage money, how to hire, all of those things were really, really fascinating. And no other financial advisor was doing that. As far as crypto assets go, which is probably my biggest passion right now, is fintech brought me to, you know, crypto assets, financial technology, which is just simply the decoupling of traditional financial services. So being able to send money on your phone, you know, transfer money from country to country, peer-to-peer lending, whatever the case may be. So I just truly believe that this is the future of money and this is the future of financial services. And I think gentlemen like myself and young, you know, women like myself are going to morph into financial consultants where young folks are going to manage their whole lives from their phone, but they're going to reach out to us when they have really difficult questions or they want advice and guidance around how to help their family, how to handle inheritance. They sold a home and then what do they do next? Tax implications, estate planning, really the things that we do, we should do, and we're really good at. So that was really it. And I wanted to, and just to, you know, I hate to take this route, but it's just the truth. As a black man in financial services and on Wall Street, it's very hard for us. So if you are a generalist, you won't make it. You have to find a specialty and have expertise in a particular area because you're not taken seriously as an advisor of color if you're a jack of all trades. It's sad, but it's just the truth. And it's just that's how Wall Street is set up. It's still very racist. It's still, you know, very xenophobic. It's still just nothing has changed on Wall Street except the date. So I think in order to have success as a man of color, which I had to learn struggling it, traditional institutions, once I had my own path and I was able to be at my own firm, I was like, I'm going to specialize and I'm going to go into an area that's new where if you look at those two spaces, there aren't it isn't as much bigotry yet and you're able to put your foot in the ground and you know, develop some really great connections. And more importantly, I do it because it's what my clients wanted and needed. And I have a passion around it, so it all fits.
Well, necessity does breed innovation. So I appreciate you doing what you need to make your way and to best serve your clients. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
And I think you're 100% right where technology is obviously disrupting and influencing every aspect of our lives, and certainly with money and, you know, those traditional asset management type roles or jobs. From my perspective, I think are going to be fewer and fewer with artificial intelligence and things like that. So it's going to be incumbent on you and me and other financial professionals to actually be the person who people call for advice, not just about their investments, but about everything else. So I appreciate
100%.
A couple parts or a couple of areas on your website talked about goals-based relationships, goals-based investing, things like that. So I just wanted to get your take on what that means to you and in your client relationships.
So to me, here's the thing. One of the things that I always ask people when they sit with me, whether it's a prospect or whether it's an actual client that you got to rehearse these things, what is your relationship with money? I had a difficult upbringing. We didn't have much money. It was a struggle. So I always give advice and get people to think from that lens, because I realize how much of a mental shift that I had to make. And when your goal is just simply to make it to the end of the week with $20, that's a financial goal, right? When the goal is, okay, we have 14 days until we get evicted, how do we transition to getting stuff in storage, finding somewhere else to live, and then still being able to eat? That's a financial goal.
Right.
So scaling that now, what I try and get people to do is goals-based planning to me is simply, what is it that we need to make sure you do day in, day out to make sure that the needs of your family is met? Basic needs, short term. Medium term, what do we need to do every single day or be on track for to make sure that what you need to do to make it to the next stage of your career? Again, because I'm dealing with younger clients, right? If your company gets bought out and you have a certain set of stock options or whatever the case may be, if you have kids that you want to go to private school, if you and your wife want to move from an apartment to a home for the first time, what do we need to do to make sure those things happen, as well as always reminding ourselves that we need to keep the basics taken care of? That is just the scarcity and fear in my brain of always having the necessities taken care of. And my clients will tell you that I beat that drum all of the time. And I think that's a value add based on where I come from, because I didn't just walk into abundance. The last bucket is long term, right? So what is your goal longer term? And I always try and get my clients to have a number. What is that number? What do you want to be worth? What do you want to have in a bank? Where do you want to live? What is your ideal scenario? And let's work towards that. It's never a retirement goal, because that's going to change, right? I think retirement for those that are, I believe, 40 and under is dead. It's going to be a working retirement. I think it's going to be a situation where we're going to live longer. So all of these financial planning tools where they cut it off at 95 is a joke, right? That's going to have to be changed. Healthcare is going to get better. And I think more importantly, if you look at this generation, they're driven, and we haven't even gotten to Gen Z, but they're very driven by goals and purpose. So they're going to be pretty much in and out of jobs their whole lives, and taking sabbaticals and coming back and starting companies and selling companies and you know, maybe taking some time to do some philanthropic things and traveling in the world and then coming back and starting a company again. So how do we just throw in stuff into this financial planning tool and say, well, Mr. Jones, if you take 4%, they don't want to hear that. So, you know, it's going to be a moving target. So I think a goals-based relationship is, I think the main thing is having the goal to always come back and reassess where your clients are. So that's kind of how I look at goals-based planning. It's a little different from what we normally hear, but I think I've had to make that adjustment based on, again, how I give advice as an advisor and my influences, and then also where my clients are and what they're looking to do.
I like it. And I think it's so important to meet people wherever they are, you know, wherever you're meeting them, help them get to where they want to go. Do you find that people need a little bit of help, or when you ask them, what's your relationship with money? Is that something that they've commonly thought about, or do you need to sort of help them peel back the layers of that onion?
Definitely need the help. I don't think people think about it. I don't think it's something that they ever, you know, thought about or had to address in their lives, because think about it. There's a few things that are taboo to talk about. We don't talk about to our friends, and, you know,
right,
about how much you make or what your bonus was or whatever, or what are you struggling with? Can you pay your bills or whatever? So we don't talk about those things. But I think if people really peel back the layers, right, and I have them do that, is, well, let's talk about it. When money comes up, what's the first thing you think about, right? Did your parents take you to the bank and teach you how to write checks? And did you have savings bonds and all these other things? What I think is fascinating, by the way. I had no experience of that, but I think those things are great. I really do. But, you know, if you have that, then that means that it means you've never had to worry about money, which isn't necessarily a good thing, because now you have a certain amount of success and you don't value it. It's not something it's in one hand and out the other. Right. So a lot of clients, and I say this to kids when I speak to them, is, most of the people that live paycheck to paycheck make six figures, but they spend like they have seven figures, right? So
right.
It's very important, and I see this all the time. So what I tell people, and I don't want to get into it too much because I want to save it for your last question, but I always try and tell them, have a good idea. I don't care what you make or what you do or how successful you are. Have a good idea of what your relationship with money is, right? And what is that? And is it healthy? Are you driven by money? Again, absolutely fine. I'm okay with that. But let's just get to the bottom of it. When you get it, are you scared that it's not enough, or it's never going to be enough, or you're really, because on the flip side of that, you have people who just hoard cash and they don't invest it. And they don't do anything with it. But it's like, no, especially people of color, black and brown folks love to see money. We love to see it. We love to actually hold it, and we love to wear it, and we love to, you know, we love to show it. But we don't trust banks. And we inherently, I did it. When I first got my hands on money, I bought jewelry, I bought cars and clothes and all types of stupid stuff. But that's just the truth. Black and brown folks have an aversion to banks, and rightfully so, because banks don't care for that population as a whole. So if you're on that side of, okay, well, I just have all this money saved, and I can double down. I came from a black Caribbean household, right? So my dad is Guyanese. So Caribbean folks, I mean, money is in your hand, it's in your pocket, it's literally under the couch, it's in, you know, it's somewhere in a can, it's in a medicine container, like it's everywhere. But it's not about the bank, it's about having that money on you. So long story short, I just think, yeah, it's helping people sit and understand, well, what does that mean? Like, what is your background? Because that matters. And I think in traditional Wall Street, the financial advisors don't even think about that. So if a 60-year-old white male is sitting with a 40-year-old Haitian immigrant and you're giving them the regular rundown, that's not going to work, my man. If a 39-year-old African-American advisor who came from a Caribbean household is sitting with a 50-year-old Jewish couple, that's probably not going to work well, right? There's some things there that aren't, there's a disconnect, which I think one of the things that's funny about Wall Street is it's okay to address some things. If you have a very diverse advisor group, which they don't, but if you did, it would make sense that if there were a group going after a particular segment of the population, that your advisor base should look like those people, because I'm going to be more comfortable with an advisor who looks, walks, and talks like me. right? And there's been studies that shown that they've asked African-American people, who would you rather have invest your money, a black advisor or a white advisor? And they've, the majority answered a white advisor. You know what that means? That means that we've been marketed to so much by the gray-haired white guy on the news that everyone thinks that right? Or when we turn into CNBC, that that's the guy that's supposed to help us. Not a Hispanic, not an Indian, not an Asian, you know, not a black, just a gray-haired white man. And again, just to finish that point, there's a place for that. And I think also there's a place for someone to say, hey, I want a Hispanic woman, right? Or I want someone in your firm or wherever to work with me. I'm a gay male, and me and my partner are looking for an advisor that is very familiar with our day-to-day or whatever. That's where I think Wall Street needs to go. They're very, 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 very timid about getting there.
Sure.
But I think those are the things that I think needs to be addressed, and it allows us to give better and more holistic advice. So, you know, just, and I know I veered off a little bit there, but I think it just comes full circle in terms of, you know, looking at people's relationship with money, and has a lot to do with how you were raised, right? A lot to do with where you come from, a lot to do with your religion, you know, a lot to do with the community that you're in. And if an advisor is ignorant to that, again, you fail in your fiduciary duty.
Yeah, I think that those are all very good and valid thoughts and insights. And I think you touched on, we're not really comfortable with talking about money. And if we're not in a conversation or an interaction with somebody who makes us feel comfortable, then we're not going to be effective as an advisor and as a client. You're not going to get out of the relationship what you really need to get on the path that you need to be on. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, Tyrone, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
Difference-making tip. Know to the dime how much money you need to live at the end of every month. I say it to every single person. I don't care about all of the other fancy dancy, hooey pooey, hopium stuff that's put into the solar system. At the end of every month, and again, I'm just speaking from a subset of the clients that I look at and just those that in general. If you take someone and you knock them out and they're unconscious for 10 years and you wake them back up, they'll be able to tell you what their rent was and what their mortgage payment was, right? We're very familiar with knowing our debts.
Right.
Right. But what we spend seems to be this big mystery, right? Or what we save tends to be this big mystery. No one could tell you that to the dime. What do you save every single month, right? What do you spend every single month? What do you need to live off of every single month? And I promise you, if you know those things, those three things to the letter, to the dime, that you will be able to capitalize on all of the seven steps to wellness. And the 10 steps to be rich, like Warren Buffett, that everyone tells you that you should do. If you can't do those three things, you will have a very hard time being successful financially.
Well, that is for sure great stuff. That definitely gets a come on.
Come on.
So, Tyrone, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
Learn more about me. You can find me. So I do a lot of my rambling on Twitter. I live there. It's at TR401. And you can follow me on LinkedIn as well. Tyrone Ross Jr. If you put it, my name in LinkedIn, I'll come up. Noble Bridge Asset Wealth Management. You can find me there. And then my page is public. So everything is there, our website, my email, everything. But those are the two places where I put the majority of my ramblings. And there'll be some other things coming in 2019 that I can't really talk about right now, but I'm excited just to put more content out for the people. And more importantly, I feel bad about this because I make sure every opportunity that I get, I say this, I usually make sure at the beginning, but I'm gonna say it now. I'm truly humbled and grateful to you for sharing your platform with me. That means a lot to me. And I usually try and make sure I get that out at the beginning so I don't forget. But I just remembered, I really mean that, because there's a lot of really smart people. And for you to give me an opportunity with an audience that you've cultivated and you've worked hard to curate, I'm grateful and I'm appreciative. And, you know, all the best to you. And hopefully your listeners take something from this that they can improve upon in their financial lives. So thank you, George. I appreciate you.
Well, you're very welcome. And I appreciate you taking the time. So, and Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Tyrone your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Find him on Twitter at TR401. Find him on LinkedIn. And then from LinkedIn, you can check out his website and you can shoot him an email and look for what he's got coming in 2019. Thank you again, Tyrone.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight because we are all in this together.
What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it.
Come on.